This episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by Ford Motor Company. Built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress, from connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning, Ford has one simple goal: to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Nicholas Saravia, the Transportation Senior Analyst at Inside.com. Our mission at Inside.com is to help entrepreneurs and executives level up their knowledge and careers. We do this through providing newsletters, networking, our community, and events. We offer 14 newsletters primarily covering the world's business, tech, venture capital, and crypto. We also host free events every month where attendees like you can hear from those that are building the worlds of tomorrow and discover exclusive insights and trends from industry experts. And today I'm joined by Dennis Tudor. He's the CEO of SwissPod, which focuses on the design of pods for the next mode of transportation. You guessed it, the Hyperloop. Welcome, Dennis.
Thank you. Thank you, Nicholas, for the introduction.
And for listeners, please submit any questions via chat, and we'll get to them towards the end of the interview. So, Dennis, let's get started. So, take us to the early days. What drove your initial interest in the Hyperloop as opposed to other upcoming modes of transportation?
I think when I started with Hyperloop, it was curiosity, pure curiosity, because I think it was 2014 or 2015 when I was reading Reddit, and I saw a comment of a person who wanted to create a Reddit loop team for the Elon Musk competition. And that was the moment when I joined that initiative. And to be honest, I was like trying to imagine what Hyperloop can bring. And I was just curious to be part of that. So I think it was a pure curiosity. So not more than that.
So, You saw this on Reddit, and then you participated in the SpaceX competition. Is that right?
Yeah, that's actually correct. So this is how I started. It was a person who commented the Elon Musk post. One of my best friends now, Richard, commented, who wants to create a Reddit loop team? And then I was one of the person who answered to that initiative. So we started a decentralized team called Rloop that subscribed for SpaceX Hyperpod competition. And that was in 2015, I remember. After that moment, we created kind of a workspace where all of us were inputting our work and our design of different subsystems of the capsule, especially that the first phase of the first competition was about design. And this allowed us to work from different corners of this world. So at that moment, I was working on the algorithms and on the control of the capsules. So after several stages, we managed to qualify in the first 100 teams that met in College Station in Texas. And we actually met the first time in person in Texas. So at that competition, at that design competition, we managed to win the best non-student team award, competing with, I think there have been more than 10,000 teams registered for that competition. And after that, we had a crowdsourcing campaign that successfully happened. And I think it was the summer of 2016 when I moved to States, when we all moved to California, where we managed to assemble and to build the capsule we're working on. And then January 2017, it was the second phase of the first competition called the Competition Weekend, where we managed to test our capsule and where we managed to win the first prize for innovation. I think that was really a great achievement we've got at the first competition. For the second competition, we're not officially accepted to be part of it. I mean, we managed to test some technologies, some levitation technologies in there, but we are not officially part of the competition because Elon Musk said that he wants to focus more on student team rather than non-student teams. We're the only non-student team accepted at that competition. So after this happened, some of us decided to leave the team, and I was one of those persons who left this initiative and came to Switzerland, where I created a new team. But for this time, I think it was a student-based team in Switzerland. And with this team, we managed to qualify again in the final and to get the first prize for the test that we've achieved with the SpaceX engineers, and the third place for speed. So basically, SwissPod was kind of a spin-off, let's say a mix of spin-offs between the competition and an university spin-off here in Switzerland.
Can you tell us more about the competition? What was the criteria you were measured on? And was it speed? Was it quality?
So I think that's really a good question, because at the first competition, we didn't really have a purpose. We didn't really have an objective for that competition. And this allowed, I think, creativity. And when you allow creativity, I think you are exposed to innovate more and more, because if you become a creative person, you combine what's on your left with what's on your right, and therefore you manage to bring innovation in a single place. And I think that was really the first competition I remember. I think is going to stay in the history of Hyper, because we've got in Los Angeles, I think, 30 teams at that moment with 30 different concepts, with passive levitation, active levitation, with air cushion, with wheel-based propulsion system, with different shapes of the aeroshell, different materials of the structure. So I think was really, really, I think more than the achievements themselves, what I learned at that competition was more how to work with passionate people and how to work with curious people. I think this was really a great achievement. And more than that, I also discovered other teams with a lot of good initiatives. And I think it was really an interesting competition and interesting initiative. So this was the first competition. But then for the second, third, and fourth competition, the only criteria was the speed. Also, some other, let's say, prizes were given, and some other criteria were checked, such as the test, as I explained to you. But the focus was more on speed. This brings, I think, kind of a good development for the technology of energy reservoirs, such as a battery pack, because you need to squeeze a power to mass ratio, which is huge. I mean, maybe 2-3 times bigger than a Tesla Model S, which is huge. But in the same time, it does not allow propulsion systems, which are, let's say, scalable for the Hyperloop industry. So it unfortunately became kind of a dragster competition, where the only objective you had is to squeeze this power to mass ratio. So if you're doing a very good mechanic system and you're squeezing all the optimization you could for your chassis or for your capsule itself, and then you're also increasing the power of the battery pack, then you would have had good chances to win the competition. For the fourth competition, where I was just at the beginning a bit involved with the team that I founded, they knew that they're not going to win the competition, but they wanted to go with a scalable propulsion system, which is a contactless propulsion system, because all the solutions we've seen at the competition and that they were winning the speed competition were wheel-based capsules, which for real high-speed application and long distance, I think it does not make sense from the technical but also economical point of view. Therefore, we've learned a lot of things at this competition, and I think it was really a good exercise, not only from the technical perspective, but also from the way the work should be done. But I think the most important one was really meeting people and seeing passionate and curious people working together. I think that's been the greatest experience we've had at this competition.
And you mentioned there were other competitors were using wheel-based. So is that in the capsule itself or through a platform that was wheel-based?
So at the first competition, I remember, also I think at the second, it was something like similar. It was a pusher, which was offered by SpaceX to push the capsules. And it was basically a car that was pushing your capsule to be propelled. But then the winners already always got a wheel-based propulsion system, which was embedded on the capsule itself. So let's say, except this pusher that I was mentioning to you, the infrastructure was always passive. So it was basically an I-beam with like two reaction plates on the sides, but not more than that. So the wheels were embedded into the vehicle.
I see. So to recap, you started a team with people that you met from Reddit, and then you left that team. You started a new one through a university in Switzerland. And how did the process from going from a university team to a business? Are you still linked to the university, or how does that?
Actually, I think I'm the only one of the only, let's say, I'm not sure if the only, but I would say one of the only PhD students in the world that is going to graduate soon, like a few months, a PhD in the Hyperloop domain. So I'm going to graduate an optimal design and strategy for Hyperloop system at the PFL, the university I'm at this moment, a PhD student. So I'm still linked, but after this competition, I was kind of saying to myself that I should do a next step in my career. Therefore, together with Cyril Denera, which is my co-founder, we managed to bring alive SwissPod Technologies. It was incorporated beginning of 2019, March, I think, or April 2019, but we really started the operations end of 2019. So I think less than 2 years ago, we really started to kick off the operations inside SwissPod. Our initiative was because we felt that the competition was not bringing enough to the Hyperloop ecosystem, and we wanted to focus for a real scale application. And we easily started this, and I think one of the major achievements we've got in the last few months are that we've got a Swiss government grant in order to bring alive Europe's first Hyperloop testing facility in Lausanne together with the university I am at this moment. So basically they also switched from the competition to real scale and real, let's say, work of a Hyperloop system. So together we managed to get this grant and to get in place this testing facility. And probably you saw that we already opened a new testing facility for a full-scale application in Colorado.
So prior to that, did you, when you received the grant from the Swiss government, was it? Was that sufficient to launch operations, or did you also go to venture capital?
So we've got several business angels as an initial, let's say, as a pre-seed investment. And we're preparing, we've got the grant, and now in probably 1 month, we're going to close a new round of investment.
Did you see any advantages or disadvantages in talking to investors in the mode being so early?
I think people really want to see progress. I think more than imagining a route between A and B, which brings you a sustainable mode of transportation and fast and super cool mode of transportation, people really want to see progress. They want to see tangible things that are happening. And in the Hyperloop industry, we felt that this hasn't happened yet, except one company that managed to test a linear, let's say, vehicle for 300 meters. I think there haven't been so much progress. So we wanted to come here with a real progress. And now showing the infrastructure, showing the testing facility and our plans for the next year, I think this convinced investors. And probably this initiative is going to enable new investors for the new round that we're going to probably open June next year to come and to be part of this journey, because we've really shown progress. We really, our initiative here to test is really to have an endurance test that will prove the technical and economical viability of a Hyperloop system for long distances and high speeds, which is one of the most critical parts of a Hyperloop system. How to make a Hyperloop system which is affordable and it makes sense from economical and technical point of view.
Hey everybody, I just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy. Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com.
Nowadays, there is a technology, and if you put that technology in vacuum, it's going to work. But I think that's not the question. The question is, how can we make it such as we can minimize the price of the infrastructure and increase the energy efficiency at high speeds? And this is what we're solving here with this testing facility.
So for this testing facility, are you building it from scratch yourself? Are you partnering with other companies?
So we built from scratch the testing facility. We designed and we mounted the tube in place here together with the university we're collaborating with EPFL. What we actually didn't do, it's the manufacturing of the tube. So we went to a workshop that manufactured for us the tubes. But I think that's not something we're looking for at this moment, because we are really focusing on the impact of low prices infrastructure, but coming from the capsule, from the technology of the capsule. So we basically want to minimize the price of the infrastructure by having a, let's say, kind of a smart capsule inside the tube.
So you're designing and manufacturing the pods, correct? So
that's true.
What goes in, into picking the right materials, and can you speak to a little bit about the cost of these?
So are we referring for the cost of the infrastructure or the cost of the pods?
Of the pods themselves.
So I think if we make an analogy, I think the price the price per passenger for our Hyperpods are around 75% of the price of an electrical vehicle per passenger. So I'm referring here the price per passenger. So I think we are, if I'm looking at this metric, we are 25% lower than the, for instance, a Tesla car.
I see. And so this track, it's full scale. How many kilometers or miles is the track?
So the track is a reduced scale model, and it's a circular track that we put in place, again, in order to test our propulsion system and our technology for long distances and high speeds. And you can see it from many perspectives. So if we are referring here to the speed, for instance, will be around 1 to 5, 1 to 6 reduced scale model. Now, our propulsion system fits in a smaller infrastructure. Therefore, if we compare the cross sections of the tubes, might be a bit smaller. So therefore, it depends what you want to compare. But if we're referring to the speed, I think we're going to be around 1 to 5, 1 to 6 from what Hyperpromise is on the market nowadays. But again, I think we don't want to test here because we've shown at the competition that we can accelerate and decelerate, and the speed is not the question. It can be achieved. But how you can maintain that speed for 1 hour is going to be a different story. And this is what we want to test in an iterative way. We want to increase slowly the speed and to maintain it at, for instance, let's say 1 hour of operations. And that might be a real challenge for the Hyperloop industry.
So you mentioned you're designing for passengers. Do you see Hyperloops being implemented fully first with passengers or with cargo?
So our go-to-market plan is to build this for cargo transportation. We will be ready with the technology probably in more or less 1 year and a half or 2 years. We'll be ready with the entire technology to go to market. We're not talking here about production because that's a different story, but I think we'll be ready with the technology in less than 2 years from now on for the cargo transportation. Our moonshot mission is to become a vehicle provider for passengers transportation, but probably that would take a bit longer than the cargo transportation. So we foresee that cargo transportation is going to be on the market in the next few years, even if the pilot project might be something a bit smaller than the expected length of trajectories which are proposed nowadays on the Hyperloop market.
Yeah, so what do you see as the main roadblocks to companies in general implementing a fully functioning Hyperloop?
To be honest, I think it's the price of the infrastructure. And might be also, I think in order to get such a mode of transportation, if we're referring here for the public stakeholders or let's say public-private stakeholders, it's also the politics. So I think nowadays we have this our go-to-market plan. We are discussing with different partners to implement this pilot project that is going to transport cargo. But I think it's a kind of a risky initiative. Even if we have the technology, I think having, let's say, putting in place 1 billion, 2 billion to build a new mode of transportation might be something which is difficult to unlock. But I'm pretty positive about that, seeing the partners we're working on, with at this moment. So I'm pretty confident that is going to happen soon.
How do you see the regulatory environment playing through? And do you see any differences between the environment here in the US, in North America in general, versus Europe or Asia?
So we're a Swiss American-based company. We started operations in US as well. I think that's a good question, and there are two regulatory, let's say, initiatives that are taken at this moment: one from Net Council from the United States, and one from the European Commission in Europe, where we are involved in the both initiatives. I think we started very well. We collaborate also with other companies, and I think that's going to be a kind of successful collaboration in the upcoming future. Of course, I think it could move a bit faster, but having involved so many entities and companies that are public and private, I think sometimes it takes a bit longer, and the process might be a bit slower. So that's why we want to relax this constraint by having in place a cargo transportation system that will not need such a strict regulatory system for to transport different goods or, I don't know, freight transportation.
I see. So here in the US, we've seen a preference from the wider public and from our governments on personal vehicles for the past 60 or so years. And we've seen how high-speed rail has failed, more or less, if you take into account the project in California, where $9 billion were spent on a tram of a small section of the entire project. At the same time, if you see, if I don't know if you happen to read HCT's feasibility study for the Midwest, it costs about $7 to $10 billion. That's what they're estimating. So it does seem like the Hyperloop option is cheaper in theory. But how do you see these sort of roadblocks from the general public, but also in terms of contractors playing out?
I think a good comparison of the Hyperloop system is not actually with railway industry, but more with the plane industry, because what we are offering here as a service for our customers is going to be a high-speed transportation system. So I think we can define Hyperloop as fast as a plane, but as convenient as a train. So while we're taking the advantage of a high-speed transportation system, we also reduce the CO2 emissions for this. So I think in the contrast with the railway system, the airplane industry, the high-speed transportation industry in US, it's pretty developed. And I think planes are working in a good manner. Therefore, we can offer the same experience, but let's say in a more conscious way to our customers and to people that are living around. So again, I would not compare Hyperloop with the train industry. I would compare Hyperloop more with the airplane industry.
How much personal space is there in the pods that you're designing?
Oh, that's a good question. So even though we actually want to bring cargo transportation first to the market, we have a dedicated team which is working to create the interior design of our capsules. We haven't released those yet. I think they look really amazing, and we'll probably make them soon available. So I think it's the space will be rather smaller than an airplane, I think a bit smaller, because then the price of the infrastructure, due to some physics limits, is gonna increase a lot in order to maintain the same speed. But our designers that are doing the interiors for our capsules, they kind of create a perspective to travel at high speeds, and we're gonna have some effects that are happening in the capsule, such as we'll not have claustrophobia problems, or we'll not have any kind of, let's say, we'll not feel constrained in a space that is actually running into a vacuum tube. So we'll make this experience as real as possible, which is very similar with a train. So I think it's not really about the space, but more about the comfort that we'll actually offer to our customers that are going to be in the capsules.
Let's zoom out for a bit. How do you see different modes of transportation interacting with Hyperloop?
I think this is something that I've been always saying. I think the modern transportation looks like an interconnected way of traveling. For instance, you go out from your house, you take one bus that is connecting you in 1 minute to a train, and that train brings you to a Hyperloop station, and then you your personal car is waiting you there. So I think a modern way of transporting people, and not only cargo, but also people, is going to be kind of in an autopilot way. So I think having developed such algorithms that will offer us an autopilot system also for Hyperloop represents a modern way of transportation. Secondly, I think we're talking here about an interconnected system between different ways of transportation, such as the train, such as personal car or Hyperloop. And I think all of them should stay in a range of sustainability. I think we need to offer alternatives in the transportation sector for customers in order to use a sustainable mode of transportation. Because, yeah, I think that's something really important that at the point will not work anymore.
We've got a question from Dan on LinkedIn. What will be the longest distance that is worth travel on a Hyperloop? Do you see the service that a passenger can take for a 10-hour ride?
That's a good question, I think, Dan. So now, to answer your question, I think infinite, I would say. So if you are capable to maximize the distance between A and B, your average energy consumption, which means the energy consumption per passenger per kilometer, is gonna be flattened. So therefore, if we manage to travel and if we manage to cruise at the maximum speed for a time which is, let's say, as long as possible, we'll be capable to reduce the average energy consumption. Of course, this is not possible due to the limitations of the nowadays energy reservoir, such as a battery pack. So I think we need to maximize this autonomy and to maximize this distance in order to minimize the average energy consumption. But in the same time, we are constrained by our possibilities to build such a huge battery pack. So it really depends. It's really, I don't have to give you, I cannot give you a number, but I think that's the idea behind that. The answer is like maximizing the distance, but being constrained by the maximum capabilities of a battery pack, which exists nowadays. So it really depends, but I would say, I think it makes sense to have such a mode of transportation to travel in an intracontinental way. I think having crossed the Atlantic is not going to be possible, but I think keeping it in an intracontinental way and replacing the planes with Hyperloop, I think it will really make sense. And if you really want to give you a number, I think between, I don't know, I would say 500 kilometers to 3,000-4,000 kilometers might be a doable distance that we can travel with a Hyperloop capsule.
Cool. So I think that's about it for today. Thank you so much, Dennis, for taking the time, considering a time difference as well. So we really appreciate it. A condensed version of this conversation will appear in our transportation newsletter tomorrow with the link to the video replay. Sign up today at insight.com/transportation for your daily dose of all things transportation.